a chance, and it was Aldridge and Hutton. 1-0.
Tuesday Night Sport on Near FM, every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m.
We'll just chat a bit more about the Rugby World Cup. Dara, your thoughts so far? Of course, the Japan victory was amazing.
Yeah.
I read one stat that there was one of the players, he had made 85 appearances for Japan, he'd never won a game in his life. The spread, I think the handicap going into it was like 56 points. To put that in context, ours was 40 something against Canada. Mm-hmm. They hadn't won a game at a World Cup in 24 years. Like this,
yeah,
in a tournament that really doesn't have upsets, because there's so many scores and just the difference between the professional teams and the amateur teams. Yeah. Amazing stuff.
It was amazing. And you were saying they haven't won a game in the... They've only won one World Cup game in their history.
Yeah.
Which just kind of puts it in perspective of how much of a giant killing this was against the mighty South Africans, who are two-time World Cup winners.
Yeah. And the big one was, I suppose, the decision not to go for a penalty.
Mm. Yeah.
Twice, to
draw the game. They wanted to win.
I was asking people who may know more about rugby tonight. Was there any reason for it? I know if it was in football, you take a draw, you get your draw, you put your point in your bag, and
I think it's that whole thing where they smelled blood and they knew that they could get in and get that try to win it.
Yeah,
and I think also for them it was a free hit.
Yeah,
because they're not expected to get through the pool. So they had the chance. They were 3 points down in. Well, overtime, it was like, the 83rd minute when they scored the try. Mm-hmm. It was a free... Any game for them pretty much is a free hit. I think that maybe they targeted, the lower teams to maybe get a win.
Yeah.
So, I think it was great that they just went for it.
Yeah, and the cliche in these occasions, Shane, is always the team that's trying to win and it's the underdog just comes up short.
Yeah.
But that, the cliche would have been they just didn't get over and the ref blows it up and the South Africans kicked the ball out of play.
Yeah.
So close, but so far. It didn't happen. It wasn't the cliche.
No, it's beyond exaggeration.
Yeah.
The reaction to this game,
Yeah.
You can't, I think everybody's just dumbfounded by the thing. That my reaction was just to laugh for a while.
Yeah. this is South Africans, two-time winners. They're brutes. They run through you before they run around you.
And even the visual, the size of them versus the... It was like kids playing against men.
The tournament needed, though.
Incredible. Yeah.
South Africa got the score to put them... South Africa got the score to put them 3 points up. And... from the kickoff, Japan just went for it. I don't know, about 5 or 6 minutes. They went
through the phases quite well at the start. And the thing that
15 man push over mall, did you see that?
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, there was no way you could give because you just could not see the ball. Yeah. But, they just went for it. There was no settling here. There was no... And I think that more than anything else is what they smelt in the water, because they got at South Africa so... straight, the 3 points went over. There's 3 points in it. They got them, and South Africa just backed off. Well, just literally backed off.
There was one aspect as well. I think earlier on in the game that was quite worrying. I think there was a period where Japan were scoring, whether it would be a try, whether it be a penalty. But as soon as at the kickoff, they'd lose the ball, and then South Africa would go down the other end of the pitch and just. Score, they would score a try.
Yeah.
That's when I thought, okay, well then this is obviously they're getting tired. So Africa, I think we're getting stopped.
Yeah, no, we're not getting stopped. The chat's good. I'm just going to say, John O'Sullivan, we have on the line. So I'm just going to bring John in from the Irish Times. How are you doing, John?
I'm very good, Neil. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we're just chatting here amongst the lads about Japan's win over South Africa at the weekend, and just maybe we'll start with that and the overall context of the World Cup. It really is the sort of start that the tournament needed.
I think in the circumstances, when you look at something like that, it's great for the tournament, because there are a lot of games that people would look at beforehand and think, well, this is just going to be a question of the scoreline, what the final scoreline is going to be. And for Japan to achieve something like that was phenomenal. The way in which they did it was brilliant. And you just couldn't but put a smile on your face when you watched it. And to have the moxie to turn down a penalty to potentially equalise within the final seconds of the match, to take the scrum, and to be patient enough and accurate enough to do what they did, and then to convert the opportunity into a try, was just, it was great sport, and it was great theatre.
Yeah, I heard your colleague Malachy Clerkin speaking on, I think it was a rival radio station at the weekend, and he was mentioned that every press conference this week, all the captains or all the number 10s would have to be asked, if you were in the same situation against South Africa in a group game, what would you go for? And what would be the norm? I'm going to be a bit ignorant on this. I found it hugely brave of Japan to do it, but I was wondering what the standard would be if France, Ireland, New Zealand or Australia were in that situation.
I think it depends on the context of the match. It's a bit like being asked, do you want half a bar of chocolate or you know, do you want a full bar of chocolate or half a bar of chocolate or potentially no chocolate at all? So you make that decision. I think most people would have taken half the bar of chocolate, which is to go for the points and say, well, you know, if you look at Japan, had only ever won one other match in a World Cup tournament, and that was against Zimbabwe, I think, back in 1991. So it would have been an absolutely unbelievable result for them. And in that context, the temptation must have been huge. Now, it wouldn't have been an easy kick, but, you know, he kicked pretty well. The fullback had kicked very, very well. I'm trying to desperately think of his name. I think it's... I'll think about the
It's okay. Remembering names is overrated anyway.
Exactly. So Japanese fullback, that's close enough, I suppose. Yeah. You know, he would have had a pretty good chance of getting him. But it was it's a massive pressure kick. And having elected to go for that, obviously there's a little bit more pressure in the context of the kick and, you know, to get the draw, all that sort of stuff. But to go and do what they did is, you know, I would say if it was France versus Ireland in the final pool game, obviously it would depend on the standings and that would determine whether you would take the kick on, whether the draw was enough, who had got more bonus points, all that sort of stuff. So I think it's just, I'm delighted they were rewarded for the choice they made. And it made, for most neutrals watching the match, and it's not an anti-South Africa thing.
No.
It's just one of those things where it's the underdog on a sporting occasion and you just wouldn't them on. And most people, most neutrals were willing them on because everything was kind of, I was watching in the Cardiff press centre and there was a huge intake of breath when they decided to go for the scrum, to take the scrum rather than kick the penalty. And people were kind of saying, oh, look, they're crazy. They shouldn't have done this. They were under a little bit of pressure at that point on their own scrum. And scrum kind of went backwards and disintegrated. And all of a sudden you were kind of thinking, oh, this is going to end in tears. And it'll be a gallant defeat and all that sort of stuff. And you'd wonder how the captain would have felt, Michael Letch would have felt afterwards. But they did it, they got it, and
they're not
mad, basically.
Yeah, and that would have been the cliche that they just came up short. But do you think there's anything in it for Ireland, the lesson to be learned, that the gap between the bigger teams, we'll say the professional teams and the amateur teams, is getting that bit closer? Ireland won, I suppose, turning to Ireland, won pretty comprehensively at the weekend in a game that followed the script of a lot of previous World Cup pool games against the weaker sides that they win by a good few tries. But do you think there's anything to be learned in that Japan-South Africa game for Ireland?
No, I think most of the teams now, and it's more than lip service, most of the teams do their analysis. The analysis that they do on any team, and they pay them that respect. They analyse the team that they're up against. They look at a game plan like Joe Schmidt won't. If you expect to see the same things, exactly the same things against Romania that you saw against Canada, you'll be disappointed. Joe Schmidt will have a look at what he needs to do, where Romania are strong and which is their kind of set piece, scrum and line out. And then he'll look at, okay, where their weaknesses are, and they don't have a great set of backs. So he'll look to keep pace and intensity and energy in the Irish performance, and that's why I think you'll see a lot of changes to the team. It's also something that France are doing. France play Romania tomorrow night in the Olympic Stadium, and if you look at the French team for that match, Philippe Saint-André has gone with, he's made 13 changes, but the composition of his pack is interesting because he's picked Bernard Leroux in the second row, who is actually a flanker, and he's picked Yannick Nianga and Fulgence Cudrago on either side, and they're both very good athletes. So what he said is, and the centre combination is Wesley Fofana, who comes back after injury, and Gael Siku, and again, they're very good footballers with very good footwork. So he's picked a team that will play at a high tempo, at a fast pace, and he's looking to kind of use the ball and use the, kind of play more expansive patterns, and that's the way he'll go after Romania. He doesn't want to get involved in an arm wrestle, and I think Ireland will adopt a similar approach to that. You know, if you don't really want to be fighting for every square inch on the gain line, basically, or for every inch over the gain line, you want to kind of move Romania around the pitch. You want to tire them out. You want to have to get them to go to their bench very early in the match because players are fatigued. They've only got, I think they've 10 players playing outside Romania, 10 players playing outside of Romania. So, you know, you're looking to tire them out as quickly as you can and not give them a kind of foothold in the game.
John Darragh here. I just want to ask you about two players from the weekend. First of all, Ian Henderson. Everyone's been singing his praises over the weekend, and rightly so. He had a great game against Canada, and he's been playing really well for Ireland the last couple of months. Do you think, firstly, that he has overtaken Devin Toner for the starting spot against the likes of Italy and France?
I think, yeah, I think certainly you can argue with his performances. Again, it'll be, and this sounds like switching in slightly horses for courses, he was brilliant the last day. And if based on current form, he is the form second row. Mm-hmm. So he can also play in the back row. I think what they'll do is they'll put out a much-changed team against Romania, and then they'll sit down and say, okay, well, what way do we want, this is the Irish management, do we want to play against Italy? And what they would have seen in the France-Italy game was that if you allow Italy to play at a pace which is quite slow during the game, they can stay more in the match. Whereas it's a bit like the Romania game. You want to put some pace on it. In those circumstances, then you look for you play your best athletes. Mm-hmm. And certainly Ian Henderson is one of Ireland's best athletes, certainly in terms of the forwards. So I think he will play against Italy. I think they have an option. Strictly speaking, if you look at the French game after that, depending on what happens, they have an option of playing Ian Henderson in the back row as well. And that comes down to what you want from your line-out scrum, what way you're going to play the match. So I think Joe Schmidt will look at it. And the short answer to your question is I think he will play the rest of the pool matches, maybe not the Romania game. And I think he will certainly be in the team. I would expect him to be in the team against Italy and France.
And the second player I want to ask you about is Luke Fitzgerald. Joe Schmidt was really impressed with his performance at the weekend as well. He seems to offer a different perspective to the game in terms of how he seems to have a good partnership with whoever he plays in the centre. I know Jared Payne and Robbie Henshaw came into a bit of criticism, especially during the Six Nations, because he didn't feel like they did enough line breaks. They just passed it on. They just went through the motions. Do you think maybe playing Fitzgerald with a Payne or a Henshaw would offer Ireland that different dimension, that could see more line breaks, to see more expansive rugby?
I don't think that there was a massive issue in them not providing Ireland with some go forward ball in midfield. I think it's again it goes back to the specifics of what they're trying to do. I think that Ireland haven't given away, particularly in the warm-up matches, haven't given away an awful lot about what they're going to do. I think a lot of people were pleasantly surprised by the way they played against Canada, where they played a more expansive style, and there were even offloads, which was a criticism of Ireland during the Six Nations. And I think that Joe Schmidt has tailored four game plans for four matches, and that's what he wants to do. He will also give the majority of the squad an opportunity. Luke Fitzgerald had a really excellent game against Canada. He has brilliant feet, which is something that kind of makes him stand out, particularly in kind of heavy traffic when you're playing 12. He's well able to step out of, and it's a very kind of cluttered area on the pitch because you've got back rows covering there as well as your opposite number. So you really do have to be sharp on your feet, or else you have to be more in the kind of Jamie Roberts of Wales or Sam Burgess, Sonny Bill Williams, man on who, you know, physically very big and strong in that area. Robbie Henshaw is very big and strong as well. So he offers something slightly different. I think himself and Payne defended extremely well at times when they needed to do that as well. I think they both read the game pretty well. And I think they can benefit from playing with each other. I think obviously Robbie Henshaw will come back in. So it's a question of whether you play Luke Fitzgerald on the left wing. I think Dave Carney starts on one wing or the other, and then it's a question after that of who you pick on the other wing, whether it's Keith Earls, whether it's Tommy Bowe, whether it's Luke Fitzgerald. I think Luke Fitzgerald played well enough in the game on Saturday, and it'll be interesting to see if he's picked somewhere else for the Romania game, or whether he gets a rest, or, you know, a lot will depend, sorry, on Robbie Henshaw's tie, his hamstring, on whether he's fit enough. Yeah. And if he's still not fit, then Luke Fitzgerald could very well play again in the centre. But I think from what I can gather during the week, they're likely to play Darren Cave at 12.
Okay.
Yeah, John, the other games, I suppose, you're looking forward to coming up over the next couple of weeks, other than the Ireland game?
I think it'll be, interesting isn't the word for it, I think Wales and England at the weekend is huge, absolutely huge. I think there'll be a lot of people who just put on the telly, sit back and watch the two of them go at each other. I think the press conferences, particularly Warren Gatland's over there, I think he's due in a press conference on Thursday, as far as I know. So that would be very entertaining because he kind of tends to lob in the odd verbal grenades. I think Wales, with all their problems, are a very, very difficult side to beat. I think they're a good cut side. I think England will be slightly skittish after the Fiji match. I think England's coach, Stuart Lancaster, deserves massive credit for sending four players on after 51 minutes to try and change the course of the game. And the bench won it for England against Fiji.
Yeah.
You'd probably, if you were a Fijian coach, you'd be tearing your hair out looking at us. You know, just the brilliant one in the same passage of play, they're capable of being brilliant and brutal. And I think that, you know, had they had a place kicker who was able to place kick on the day, you know, England would have been under a lot more pressure than they were. They might have been trailing going into the last 10 minutes of the match before Mike Brown, I think, got his second try in about 71 minutes. So, I think that'll be a massive game. England know that they're, you know, there's massive pressure on both sides to win this match. And Wales have had so many horrendous runs with injuries in the tournament, lost another couple of props in the Uruguay match, and centre Corey Allen, who's out of the tournament having scored three tries. So it's going to be very difficult. And the loser of this game on Saturday is under huge pressure, with both sides still having to play Australia.
And finally, I'm just going to ask go on, who do you think will win it?
I don't know. I said before the tournament and Wales' six injuries that they've got, I fancied Wales to come through and one of England or Australia to join them. I just think Wales have proved over the last couple of seasons that they're a tough side and they're a good cup side.
Yeah, as the Americans say, a good clutch side, I think is what is the term they use.
Yeah, I think that they tend not to beat themselves, but given the number of injuries, if they do come out of that pool, given the injuries they've sustained, it will be one of the great achievements in the World Cup.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I wasn't convinced by England. Wales have their injury problems. If I had a coin here, I'd probably toss it in the air, see what side it came down on.
And finally, before I go, I'm just going to ask you, the retirement of Kevin McLaughlin today, do you think this is something that may happen more and more in the game? It's very sad for a player, especially for neurological reasons.
Well, I hope not, and I would take this, I suppose, this opportunity to say, I sent him a text this afternoon. I think it is, I watched him play from his days as a schoolboy in Gonzaga, and he was an outstanding schools player. He has been horrendously unfortunate with injury. Initially with his knees when he was in his kind of teenage years and early 20s, and then two shoulder reconstructions and now concussion. I think it's such a pity, because as a person and as a player, he was really, really excellent. And it is one of those things. You look around now and you see Justin Thomas, the Welsh player, who's also retired because of concussion injuries. You hope it doesn't happen. I think they've got to look at the game in general.
Yeah.
I was talking to Eddie Jones, the Japanese coach. Now, this would be slightly self-serving if you were looking at where he was coming from, but he made a lot of very kind of valid points. He said that the game, people, the players have got bigger, stronger, faster, and the pitch has stayed the same size.
Yeah.
The ball is in play for only 27 minutes in a match out of 80 minutes, roughly speaking, or can be in play for somewhere around that. He said you've got to have a faster game where players get fatigued, and there's more space in the pitch. Therefore, there are less collisions, head-on-head collisions. You've got to reduce the number of replacements that come on a pitch. Instead of being able to replace half your team, often with players who are as big or bigger than the players that they're replacing. So you maintain the kind of the nature of the collisions, the hugely physical collisions in the game, right through to the final whistle. So I think some of his thoughts would be interesting to see. I think World Rugby has to do something. They can't continue the way they're going. And have the number of players who are coming off with concussions. And even though there's better education and a better appreciation and a better system in place, as much as they have done with the head injury assessment, there's still too many. And nobody wants to see any young person or anybody at any age playing at whatever level they're playing have to, you know, suffer the consequences of, you know, head injuries or, you know, a series of head injuries in sport.
Yeah, no, well said, and maybe it's something we can come back to after the tournament and look back, but our best wishes do go to Kevin on his retirement. Sad news today. Thanks very much, John.
Pleasure.
Thank you, thank you. And that was John O'Sullivan of the Irish Times there, keeping us up to date and with all the World Cup going on. It's something, lads, the concussion injury or concussion retirement due to it, the recommendations were that he was going to put himself at risk if he played rugby anymore. It's something that really rugby does have to look at.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at what's happened in the NFL in America, and what was it, you know, the head injury issue it kind of flared up last year for a while. It got a lot of attention. And then it's kind of gone back down again now, you know. And
I think it was Johnny Sexton getting a series of concussions, probably raised the pro, and Brian O'Driscoll had them as well, I think.
I mean, the O'Driscoll thing is particularly concerning. I mean, how many times have we seen him stumbling around Croker or the Aviva? And I mean, that's very sad what happened today. But I'm actually happy that he's made a decision.
If that's the advice, he's gone for the right one. Yeah. Dara, we're a couple of minutes left, but your thoughts on it?
Like Sherman was saying, I think a lot of it has to do with the style of tackling as well.
Yeah.
Because if you see with the likes, because Johnny Sexton, obviously, he had his troubles last season, but the way he tackles, he's kind of putting himself at risk all the time. He goes very high with his tackles. He puts his head into their shoulder.
Yeah.
All the time with his tackles. And now I know he's a brave guy, he'll always go for the tackle like that, but he should start looking at maybe, like, if you go lower, you're at less risk as well. Which should be something that would be looked at. Now I know, like, especially this World Cup, they're really cracking down on, I think it's the pulling away from the hip with the neck.
Yeah,
I think we've seen that the last couple of games. They're definitely clamping down on that. I think you'll never be able to enforce, like, you can't stop, you can't tackle, you can't, well, there is high tackle, but you can't tackle like the way he does, where he tries to, like, I think he does basically bear hugs them and brings them down, but at that force you're going to be in a lot of trouble if you don't do it right.
And Mark, last word to you.
I think the problem is that professionalism now, and the bigger and the stronger and the fitter these fellas get, the tougher it's going to be to legislate for that kind of injury. I mean, we talked about a couple of weeks ago about the GAA and how big and tough and strong these guys are now, and are walloping off each other. Rugby's the same, and it's just in the pursuit of greatness or winning, players are just going to go harder and stronger and longer. And rugby is very good at legislating for stuff like that, but how you do it?
Yeah, it's definitely something. I think it's something we can come back to. Maybe get someone from the sports surgery clinic or someone near, you know, with a medical influence that can give us the thought process, because I know there's an awful lot of good stuff happening there at the elite level that can maybe inform the debate a bit more, and we can have a chat about after the tournament on it.
By Sanson, it goes Aldridge, and Hutton, 1-0!
Tuesday Night Sport on Near FM, every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m.